Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to Africa Link. It's Tuesday, the 24th of April, 2018. I am Zipporah Nyamura.
With me, Jane Ayeko Kumet. This program comes to you from our DW studios live in Bonn, Germany.
In the program today, it is back to work for most of the striking nurses in Zimbabwe, but the challenges still remain.
Doctors and nurses have attended to me very well, but they have said that I need blood transfusion. I do not work. I am 67 years. I have to buy pints of blood, but I do not have the money.
And in Central African Republic, authorities, or rather the president, wants to speed up disarmament and demobilization as people fear of a possible destabilization.
I have appealed, as did the president, to the people not to panic. The government is already taking steps to put an end to this war. Some people think there is a possible destabilization, but that is not the case.
Yes, we have these stories plus more, but first let's hear what has been happening around the world.
This is Abubakar Jalo with the DW News. US President Donald Trump said on Tuesday Iran will face big problems if it restarts its nuclear program. Trump was speaking at the start of a White House meeting with French President Emmanuel Macron.
President Macron, people of France, people of America, now is the time for strength. So let us be strong. Let us be united. Let us honor our past and face our future with confidence and with pride. And let the United States and France stand forever in solidarity for the noble cause of liberty and peace.
The secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, said in a newscast on Iranian state television that Tehran might withdraw from the nuclear treaty if President Trump scraps the deal signed with world powers in 2015. French police questioned billionaire Vincent Balore on Tuesday over allegations that his business group Balore had worked on the election campaigns of presidential candidates in Africa in return for lucrative port contract. A spokesman for the Guinean government said on Tuesday that a contract given to the Balore group to build a container port in Conakry was in strict compliance with the law. Balore's interrogation is part of an investigation into corruption allegations of businesses practiced in Guinea and Togo. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said on Tuesday that the deadly van attack in Toronto on Monday had not changed the country's threat level or affected security preparations for a G7 summit in Quebec in June.
Obviously, all Canadians continue and will continue to have questions about why this happened, what could possibly be the motives behind it. As was indicated last night by our public security minister, at this time we have no reason to suspect that there is any national security element to this attack, but obviously the investigations continue.
25-year-old Canadian Alec Minassian, who plowed a van into a crowded Toronto sidewalk, was charged Tuesday on 10 counts of murder and 13 of attempted murder. Public Safety Minister Ralph Gadel ruled out the theory of a terrorist attack. Ethiopian President Mulatu Teshome Wirtu said on Tuesday that Ethiopia is not yet ready for foreign investment in its telecoms and banking sectors. However, he added that the African continent's second most populous nation after Nigeria is interested in developing its manufacturing sector. And finally, the Israeli government has said it is abandoning plan to forcibly deport African migrants who had entered the country illegally. The government had been working on a plan to deport thousands of mostly Eritrean and Sudanese men to a third country against their will. Israel said its immigration authority will continue to find options to deport migrants voluntarily, but their forced removal is no longer on the agenda. For more stories, go to our website at dw.com or download the DW app from your Google Play Store or iTunes. I am Abubakar Jalo.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program with me, Jane Ayeko Kemet.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura. Thank you to those who are listening to us live, Ibrahim Nuhu, Damudi Jerry, and of course, Donald Sesele. If you have any comments or reactions on these stories, leave them on our page, TW Africa. We start off in Zimbabwe. The situation in the hospitals has largely returned to normal after nurses today resumed work following weeks of strike. At least 16,000 nurses downed their tools early this month, demanding better pay and working conditions. They had been fired by Vice President Constantino Chimwenga, but had to reapply for reinstatement.
However, the nurses' lawyers say they will go to court to challenge the validity of their client's dismissal to protect labour rights in future. DW's Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Patients stream in at Harare Central Hospital after Zimbabwe's Health Minister David Parirenyatwa announced that things were back to normal. Parirenyatwa says they've hired unemployed nurses and reinstated those who had reapplied for their jobs after the strike. Priska Mutetwa has brought an 80-year-old mother who is recovering from a broken arm.
Now they are back to work, everything is normal. Since we have come, we have been saved. Yes, everything is fine now.
I met 67-year-old man suffering from anemia. Like many patients, his situation is dire.
Doctors and nurses have attended to me very well, but they have said that I need blood transfusion. I do not work. I am 67 years. I have to buy pints of blood, but I do not have the money.
A pint of blood in Zimbabwe costs about $120, which he cannot afford. It is such cases which also pushed nurses to go on strike early this month. They want the government to improve conditions in hospitals, saying lack of enough equipment and medicine is demotivating. But in his response, Health Minister David Parirenyatwa says a little patience by Zimbabwean nurses will pay off.
It is very, very regrettable and very unfortunate that the nurse fraternity chose to down tools when government was seriously addressing the issues that nurses and other health professional categories had raised.
However, the Zimbabwe Nurses Association says they will go ahead with their case challenging their dismissal. Kumbirai Mafunda of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights explains.
The lawyers who are handling this case are seeking an order which they would want to annul the termination of contracts for nurses. They want that decision to be declared null and void, to be declared unlawful, because they argue that it was unprocedural, it was unlawful, it was unconstitutional.
Columbus Mavunga sent that report from Harare.
And we did ask on our Facebook page, what is the condition like in the hospitals in your country? Sami in Ghana says, here in Ghana and Africa at large, health services are really poor. Check the doctor-patient ratio and you will be shocked.
He goes on to say, our hospitals do not have the state-of-art machines to perform diagnoses. No wonder our presidents fly abroad to seek medical treatment. And from Uganda, Charles Songole says, reinstatement through inking a new agreement inevitably comes with conditionalities that can only strengthen the hand of the employer and not the fired nurses.
Charles in Bameda, Cameroon says, in my country, if you dare strike, you will be charged for rebellion against the state and gain 11 to 13 years in prison.
DW is live on Facebook, DW Africa, so do join the conversation there too. Elsewhere in the world, President Donald Trump welcomed French President Emmanuel Macron to the White House Tuesday with a pomp-filled ceremony on the South Lawn, opening a day of talks on the future of the Iran nuclear deal and the crisis in Syria.
Top on the agenda of their talk is the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, which Trump maintains is insane and a disaster. Under the agreement, Iran agreed to limit amount of nuclear activity in exchange for lifting of international sanctions. For more, we now join our correspondent in Washington, Karsten von Namen. How much can Macron convince Trump on sticking to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal?
That is the big question. Definitely Macron will point out to President Trump that the Europeans want to keep the Iran deal, that the US should not leave the deal without knowing with what to replace it. But I'm not sure that during this visit, Mr. Trump will give any ground or back down or just promise to Macron that he will stay in the deal. So I think Mr. Macron and Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, will try a kind of a tag team tactic. So Macron will try to prepare the ground, then Merkel will reinforce that point on Friday when she is going to meet President Trump in the White House, and probably also Theresa May, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, will also join in one way or the other in the next few days, because the next deadline is on May 12th. Until then, they have to convince Donald Trump that getting out of the Iran deal is a bad idea.
Macron received a lavish welcome, and Trump said they have developed a wonderful friendship since last year. Where does this leave Germany, and how does Trump perceive the two European leaders?
Well, definitely Angela Merkel has had more difficulties to create a kind of personal bond with President Trump. The two people are too different. Chancellor Merkel is a very pragmatic and sober person. She is really about the issues. And Donald Trump is the complete opposite. He always tries to form an emotional bond with his counterpart. He's not very strong when it comes to details, and not even when it comes to facts generally, really. I don't think that means that President Macron is now the leader of Europe and Angela Merkel is on the sidelines. It's just that they are playing different roles, but they're working together very closely to advance Europe's agenda.
That was DW's senior correspondent, Carsten von Namen, in Washington. Over now to another story. It is now 2 years since the civil war in the Central African Republic officially ended. But armed conflicts still persist. The local population has put the blame on the government and UN peacekeepers for not managing the situation. The Central African Republic's president, Faustin Archange Touadéra, now wants to accelerate the disarmament, demobilization and reintegration of members of armed groups in his country.
But such an operation would require necessary reforms of the security sector for reconstitution of national defense forces and interior security forces, he said. Mr. Touadéra's comments came as the FPRC, which is the Popular Front for the Rebirth of Central Africa, one of the country's main armed groups, threatened to march to Bangui. The group said it wanted to act following a UN peacekeeper operation against militia in the volatile PK5 Muslim enclave of the capital. President Touadéra, who urged dialogue as the preferred approach to combat the violence that has ravaged his country since 2013, stressing that consolidation of peace can only be achieved through the restoration of security throughout the territory. Prime Minister Simple Saranji equally called for calm.
I have appealed, as did the president, to the people not to panic. The government is already taking steps to put an end to this war. Some people think there is a possible destabilization, but that is not the case. The Central African Republic is vigilant.
Prime Minister of the Central African Republic speaking about the situation of disarmament in his country. And we have a quick comment coming in on that story from Ibrahim Jallo in The Gambia, who says they should try to correct the solution to end this political conflict. The African Union and other international organizations should work for towards the end of the conflict.
Tawadi Efedi thinks the government needs to sit on a dialogue table with these people because reintegrating them and disarming them does not solve the problem.
Keep those comments coming and we shall read them as and when we come. You're listening to DW's Africa Link program with me, Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I am Zipora Nyambura. Africa Link is also live on Facebook via DW Africa. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, have you heard of robot journalism? Well, it's happening in several African countries, and many say there's a better side to it.
People can lie, human beings can lie. And so the thing with tech is that it doesn't lie, so you'd rather rely on it.
And we shall also hear why millions of Austrians have signed a petition titled Don't Smoke. But first, we go to the Gambia. It's just over a year since the country saw the end of dictatorship, sowing an era of democracy. Many Gambians, especially the young people, had great hope. In a country with a population of just about 2 million people, nearly every family had lost a young person trying to make their way to Europe through the back door, or at least knew one such a person. This is one of the most pressing problems they hope to see change. But 1 year down the road, we asked young Gambians what they felt.
Till now, I didn't see actual changes that we want right now yet.
I love being a Gambia because Gambia is a beautiful country. I like it here.
My opinion is that I want to stay in the Gambia. I see a good future for me in the Gambia. I want to stay here, finish my schooling and work for the Gambia here.
If I graduated and have a good job, I would love to stay. But if I don't have a good job and if I have the opportunity to travel abroad, I will go.
The way the country is going right now, it's not that much promising though. But we look forward in the future. Most of the youth here, like you, go to school, graduated and without a job. So it's kind of challenging for us though. So we kind of have some mentality that will take us back to back way thing, this migration.
I think you can make it from this country here, but it's just that the way things are going with the change of governments, so it will be a bit hard. And the standards abroad cannot be compared here, that is very true. But we should also have to understand that there is no place like home.
Gambian youth sharing their views about prospects within their country. Well, our own Fred Muvunyi, who is in the Gambia for the Town Hall Migration Dilemma debate, caught up with the country's Minister of Information and Communication Infrastructure, Demba Ali Jawo, and sought his response to the young people's concern. Take a listen.
I think the people are a little bit impatient. We are just barely 1 year in office. I mean, try to correct a system that has been broken for over 22 years. It definitely needs much, much longer than that for, you know, for the situation, for changes to be quite evident to everybody else. Well, we can understand the frustration of the young people. In fact, the situation has even improved quite a lot, because in the past, a young Gambians used to just leave this country in droves, go through the Sahara Desert, go to Libya, try to cross the Mediterranean Sea. Hundreds and hundreds of them have died in the process. Very risky journey.
But you're promising something for young people. Is there anything in the pipeline for these young people?
Well, of course, I mean, the government has a lot of programs for the young people. In fact, I mean, we've been working with the European Union and other donors, you know, to help us in the process of trying to get some projects for the young people to entice them to stay in the country.
And then there are another number of young people being returned, repatriated in the country. What do you have for them?
It's a situation that this government does not have much control over. You know, if people go to other countries and for one reason or the other, those countries say that they are not welcome there and decide to deport them, all that we can do as a country is to receive our people. I mean, if they are deported from any other country, we receive them. And for the others who have been languishing in prison and other, you know, detention camps in Libya, definitely it is also in our interest to do everything possible to get them back into this country. That is what the situation has been. And the government is not only bringing them and forgetting about them, we are trying to put programs in place so that they can be engaged in something else.
The Gambian Minister of Information and Communication Infrastructure, Demba Ali Jawo. He also doubles up as the government spokesman.
And as we mentioned in that report, DW is conducting a town hall debate focusing on the migration dilemma in the Gambia. And that's going to take the kick off just after this program. So if you're already tuned to Africa Link on our Facebook page, you don't even have to leave. You just keep it there and follow the migration dilemma, which we'll be covering live on our Facebook in partnership with ITV. Now, on that story, we also have some reports, some comments here. Derek from Berlin says, oh, actually asks a question to the minister whether or not he has a strategy to help the young people in the country. And he goes on to say he should spend his time working out a strategy for getting the youth out of this situation.
Prince Akere Nweyi Divine from Southern Cameroon and now in Ghana says the tragedy of African leaders is that they believe they need Europe or America to develop. They need their people to develop instead.
And once again, the town hall debate, if you're in Gambia, just rush to the University of the Gambia right now and you'll catch the debate there shortly.
Africa on the move.
Separating facts from fiction is never easy. But with drones, sensors, and satellites, journalists in several African countries are picking apart half-truth that they couldn't get before. Leonie von Hammerstein from Hammerstein and Ajit Naranjan found out more about this growing trend of journalism.
People can lie, human beings can lie. And so the thing with tech is that it doesn't lie, so you'd rather rely on it.
Data journalist Soila Kenya has seen how technology can be a tool to unearth the truth. For instance, when terrorist group Al-Shabaab struck the military base of Kulbio in Somalia last year, Kenyan defense forces downplayed the damage and claimed they had repelled the attackers. But satellite stills and drone footage told a different tale. By comparing the images with Al-Shabaab propaganda, analysts found militants had overrun the base and inflicted heavy casualties in the process.
We would still be at the point of, by the way, Kubir, what actually happened if it wasn't for this satellite imagery, if it wasn't for these journalists who came out and were like, okay, we need answers on this thing. It really did sort of unearth something that really would not have been possible otherwise.
Robots can help reporters access areas that they can't easily reach on foot, said Justin Arenstein, director of NGO Code for Africa, at a conference in Italy 2 weeks ago. Sensors and satellites can shine light on underreported issues and perhaps bring them to international attention.
For example, if you compare what's happening in Syria at the moment with what's happening in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the fact that although there are bigger movements of people, reports of larger numbers of civilian deaths out of the Congo is receiving far less attention simply because there's no visual evidence of this happening.
Sensors are strongest where humans aren't. One project tracked land grabbing in South Africa's vast Kruger National Park. Another distributed phone-like sensors to map air pollution in smoggy Nairobi, Kenya. A third used underwater microphones to catch unsustainable dynamite fishing off the Tanzanian coast. Drones are taking off too. Photographer Johnny Miller, founder of African Drone, has used flying cameras to document inequality across the continent. Striking aerial images show the luxurious side of African megacities. Golf courses, swimming pools, mansions, sitting just a wall away from dense slums. One reason drones have gotten off the ground so quickly in sub-Saharan Africa is the lack of legislation prohibiting their use. This is starting to change. South Africa was the first to put regulations in place curbing the rights of drone pilots and requiring them to go through a lengthy and costly registration process. More countries are now following suit. Regulations can be a good thing, says Miller, helping to protect the public from dangerous flying.
But overall, I feel like it's too restrictive for citizen journalists and artists and small business owners to be able to use drones to do what they're intended to do, which is provide a new way of looking at the earth.
A report by Ajit Niranjan and Leonie von Hammerstein.
Focus Europe.
Smoking in public has become a controversial topic in recent years, largely because non-smokers argue of risks they're exposed to. In Austria, more than 500,000 Austrians have signed a petition titled Don't Smoke. It demands that the government abandons plans to liberalize smoking laws.
Now, the new Conservative coalition recently overturned a law banning smoking in all cafes, bars and restaurants. Instead, it wants the cafe owners to decide whether customers can light up. Kari Skyring reports from the city of the cafe house in Austria.
A typical Viennese cafe has waiters in suits, dark wood furniture, newspapers, good coffee, and cigarette smoke. Well, not all of them, but even in those with non-smoking areas, including this one, customers often walk through the smoke zone to get to the non-smoking one. And the doors to that zone are propped open, so the waiters can come and go with ease. The smoke, too. Last year, the Austrian government passed a law which would have banned all smoking in cafes, restaurants and bars, but the new Conservative government has come to power and promptly abolished that law before it could take effect. So the old rules apply. Smoking and non-smoking zones and very small establishments able to decide whether to be all smoking or no smoking. International visitors to Austria, especially from the United States or the UK, often comment on the number of smokers in public places. Around a quarter of the population lights up at least once a day. That makes it among the smokiest four or five countries in Europe, behind Bulgaria, Greece and Hungary. And according to an EU survey, Austrian women are Europe's top smokers. Professor Paul Savelda has coined the term the ashtray of Europe to describe his country. He's the president of Austrian Cancer Aid and one of the organizers of the Don't Smoke petition.
We know that in Austria, every year 13,000 people die as a consequence of smoking. We know that young people begin to smoke, if they have had the opportunity, in cafes and bars. These are all factors.
This suburban cafe has many classic Viennese features. Marble-top tables, art deco mirrors, and ceilings of a familiar yellowish brown, wrought only by many decades of cigarette smoke. Proprietor Anna Karnicha says she's in favour of government plans allowing her to decide the smoking rules.
As the host or owner, I support this right that I can decide whether it's this type of cafe or that type. And then nobody can come in and find it's too smoky or that they don't like it. That's a matter of taste.
Regular customer Mariana is pleased the new government is more smoker-friendly than the last.
I come to a cafe where they're still smoking, because it's pleasant when I'm having a coffee. For me, a smoking ban would be a catastrophe.
A catastrophe for a smoker, perhaps, but a smoking gun for the government. More than 500,000 signatures on the Don't Smoke petition means Parliament is now required to debate smoking laws. It also puts politicians under pressure to hold a referendum, one that could see the government defeated on one of its very first initiatives. Kerry Skyring, DW, Vienna.
Interesting developments in Austria about smoking. Now, let's take you back to that robot story about robot journalism. And we asked you if you think this is a good initiative to promote journalism. And you have been sending your comments. One from Arenzi Chuku, who doesn't tell us where he's writing from. He says, we do not need these in Africa. And that is very simple. And he goes on to say, if the drone will be manufactured in Africa, then I'll accept it. But if not, we don't need it.
Charles Ungole in Uganda says, regulation but not censorship is okay. Regulating investigation and prying technologies for the common good is the way ahead with this technology.
Once again, keep your comments coming by visiting our Facebook page. We are live on Facebook and we shall continue to be live on Facebook, bringing you up to date with the migration dilemma debate in the University of the Gambia. And that also continues us. We continue with other comments coming in for in regards to the Gambia. We still have comments regarding to the story where European countries are supposedly deporting the Gambians, saying they are now a democracy, but the Gambian president said the country is still bankrupt. And on that note, Prince Akere again said, the tragedy of African leaders is that they believe they need Europe or America to develop. They need their own people instead. Those deported should be educated by their countries to develop their own countries. Europe has a right to police its borders, and so does Africa.
Ibrahim Jalo from Gambia says, I blame the government about this issue. They are responsible for creating job opportunities for the working youths, so they will not take the risk journey to Europe.
Keep the debate going. Go to Facebook. Africa Migration Dilemma in the Gambia is going to be live on DW Africa Facebook page. My name is Jane Ayeka-Kumet. Thank you for listening to Africa Link.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Bye for now.